This episode of the Case for Safety podcast is sponsored by Safety 2024. Registration is now open for Safety 2024 in Denver. Join us Wednesday, August 7th through Friday, August 9th to connect with your safety community and get up to speed on the latest knowledge and innovations in the field. Learn more and register at safety.assp.org. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Case for Safety podcast. I'm your host, Scott Fowler. Appreciate you joining us today. I'm very excited for today's episode where we're going to be talking about finding your focus in the world of occupational safety and health. And here to share his insights on that and a model he developed around this topic to help safety professionals and organizations find that focus, I'm very happy to welcome Sean Galloway, CEO of ProAct Safety Incorporated. Sean, welcome. So great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Scott. I'm happy to be here. I look forward to this conversation. I've been thinking about it all weekend, so I'm ready to go.
Same here. This is something you recently wrote about in our professional safety journal, and it really caught my attention as an interesting topic because, you know, there's so many safety professionals and organizations out there, you know, and particularly with safety professionals, they're being pulled in so many different directions, you know, and trying to find out where they need to direct that focus at any given time. And you developed a model of what you call your 10 focus necessities, which we're going to get into in a little bit. But to start things off, I thought we'd talk about, you know, how safety professionals and organizations, you know, with so many different things going on, how can they determine, you know, where they should put their focus at a particular time?
Good question. There's a couple of ways to look at that. One is the safety strategy should support and enable the business strategy, the trajectory of the organization. All organizations are looking to sustain, maintain viability. So, and they do that through growth, acquisitions, organic. And as we look to growth, that becomes a strategic priority for the organization. How are we going to effectively, safely hire and onboard all of these individuals to the organization? And we've experienced that quite significantly post-COVID. I have organizations where they're reporting to me that some of the people entering into the workforce don't know the basic things like righty, tighty, lefty, loosey. So we just assume someone comes in with a basic knowledge of tool and equipment. So we need to be prepared for that. On the other side, if we're not part of the acquisition conversation, we're going to be surprised by the lack of due diligence that was performed. So how can we determine where to go? Well, we need to make sure that we're a part of the conversations, not just around business continuity, but business growth. And a red flag for me, and I've looked at more safety strategy really than anyone, but one of the red flags that stands out is who owns what percentage of the execution of safety strategy. To me, if it's any more than 30-35%, not a magic number, it differs for organizations based on their span of control and influence and resources and everything. But If we're looking at it, it has to make sure that we're supporting with the business strategy. You know, Peter Drucker's old quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast. My follow-up is, and the business strategy will eat the safety strategy all day long. So it can't be safety versus business, which means operational leadership, to use that term kind of broadly, has to be a part of that conversation about what are we going to do, not do, or even stop doing. And that, we need business qualifiers. We need to make sure that the decisions that we make are qualified against a few things. Looking strategically at safety, we have to make sure we're focusing on the most important things, the things that are going to move the needle, create value. And that's what strategy is. It's value creation. The other side to that is to make sure we're doing what's very difficult, and that's creating the perception of value with the things we're focusing on. If we're asking employees, supervisors to change, do something different, if they don't see the value in it, then at best you get some sort of malicious compliance or you get some sort of cooperation with it. We want people to want to see value and have that degree of engagement. So we need decision qualifiers. That has to come from data, not opinions. So we need to make sure the data comes from, you know, the injury incidents that have taken place. More and more capabilities exist nowadays for companies to be able to run a Pareto analysis looking at cause and effect, significant few, trivial many, by the variables that are tracked. Time of day, day of week, age of injured employee, how long they've been with the organization, back to that organic growth perspective. But also inspections, audits, compliance findings. So we need data to drive that. We also need to be able to have alignment with the leadership team about what success looks like. And if we have time to talk about that, that's a really interesting concept. But a lot of times organizations aren't aligned at the top of the organization about what success looks like, how we're going to get there, who's responsible, and over what time period. So if we go in this direction, if we prioritize this, is it going to get us closer to what we want versus distancing what we don't want, injuries and incidents? And then once we set our priorities, the question comes in, does this action, does this tactic, does this thing we're trying to focus on, does it fit within the priorities? Does it get us closer to our vision of success? And does data support this? And that's a big opportunity because, you know, I've been going to ASSE years ago for a couple of decades. And if you had an endless budget, you could spend billions at the show alone just purchasing all the great stuff that the vendors have on the show. Some of it may get us closer. Some of it may distract us from what we're trying to do. So we need to make sure we're using data. It's getting us closer to what we want. It fits into the priorities. And finally, is this going to move the needle in our ability to prevent injuries and recover when mistakes are made?
You hit on a few things there that I think tie back well to the focus necessities, you know, talking about, you know, getting everyone aligned, establishing those priorities and demonstrating that value to, in the end, as you noted, prevent those injuries and illnesses. So when you think about the focus necessities, and we'll get into each of those in a little bit, when you think about the focus necessities in that context, you know, how can they help organizations get there to, you know, to achieve that alignment, understand their priorities so that everybody understands the value of safety?
I'm a big fan of Deming's principle of people support what they help to create. So getting us aligned at the leadership team, having them have a sense of say and stakeholder involvement in this, that's a really critical thing. So we need to get that alignment. And where we first discovered this is probably about 17, 18 years ago. We were working with an organization, multinational, 300 locations around the world, and the executive vice president of environmental health and safety was taking some additional post-grad classes and strategy, and he saw an opportunity. So he went to all of the business leaders in safety and gave them something like 6 months. Give me at least a strategic framework for what you're going to be focusing on over the next few years. And knowing what he knew coming from some of these great universities and classes he was taking, he realized none of them had an effective strategy. And we were an advisor to him at the time, and we developed a model that highlighted what we typically see is the average strategy. And we call it the perpetual cycle of avoiding failure. And it's got four steps to it. Number one, you look at your incident rate. Number two, you set a new incident rate goal or objective. Number three, you develop a list of things to do, and then you do those things. And the problem is actually when we receive improved performance, we fall into the correlation causation trap. We're doing these things, have better performance, therefore we have better performance because we were doing these things. Maybe not. So when we're trying to set priorities, it is extremely important at the top of the organization that we're aligned on where we think we're at today, where we're trying to go, how we're going to address that delta, how we're going to close the gap, and who's responsible for it. Because if we're still in this 1990s thinking that safety is the safety professional's problem, the safety strategy should be established in a silo by the safety professional, then we're going to reach a point, back to the earlier comment, where there's conflict. And we don't want that conflict to exist. So we need to get aligned at the top of the organization. And the tool that I've used for a long time, when I go into an organization and I'm looking at their existing strategy, their systems, their culture, all of that, that I use that to help me determine the efficacy of their overall plan. Are they putting the right level of energy in these different categories? And where do they think they're at? Because some leaders think, hey, we're great on compliance. We have no legal exposure. Meanwhile, the safety professional is saying, that's what general counsel is telling us. We need that alignment. But one other thing I'll add is in setting realistic expectations of change. I'm working with a really large organization right now, and they're 3 years into their what we call safety excellence strategy, and they're having phenomenal success. But the executive team, several of them are of this mindset that we can move on to other things now. And we found when we were writing, Terry and I, my former business partner who's retired, when we were writing that book, it was published in 2013, Steps to Safety Culture Excellence, the research that we found is culture alone takes about 10 years to effectively lead to transformation. You can have some great improvement in the first few years, but until it becomes the way we do what we do and why we do what we do, until it really becomes that sustainability mechanism, it takes time. And especially, there's a lot of changes that exist in most companies, CEO in and out, VPs in and out. And if we don't have that stickiness, it's going to take quite a long time. So finally, what I'll add is the purpose of having this type of conversation is to get level set on the expectations that this isn't a one and done. This isn't a 3 years, and then we move on to other things. This will be baked into the DNA about how business decisions get made, not safety decisions over here, growth over here. How are they connected?
Right. To your point, everything is. This is not, you know, it can't be safety in a silo over here and that's the safety professional's problem. Everything is intertwined toward the success of the business as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott, I often find that safety performance is quite often a symptom. Now, sometimes it's a symptom that the organization's very healthy, because you'll also see it manifest in great quality, customer service, delivery cost, all of that. But often if you see things starting to slip or going in the wrong direction from safety performance, most often I find that that exists deeper in the organization, deeper in the culture, manifests very loud in safety because someone was injured or worse. But usually that's systemic of other things that are going on. So what I often recommend when, like this client that I mentioned 3 years into it, now's the point where they have to move past focusing on that safety culture. They have to focus more broadly on the overall organization or occupational culture, because safety is just a part of it. And you'll reach a point of diminished returns when we're just going after this like a safety opportunity. This has to be an overall business opportunity. And safety is a great area that we can have wins in.
Moving into the focus necessities themselves, you identify 10 in the Professional Safety Journal article I mentioned. So I want to kind of, you know, walk through each of those and, you know, the role that each of them plays in, to your point, you know, not just safety performance, but improving that business performance overall.
Yeah, sure. So I certainly want to encourage people to read the article and, you know, drive him over there. So I'll abbreviate, I guess. But conditions, and the way that I wrote this to help organizations kind of assess where they're at, and there's two types of the assessment that if you want access to this tool that I'm happy to share. One is, what percentage of effectiveness in our efforts, where are we with that? Are we 100% there? Are we 20% there? And that's an interesting conversation to send out to the different executives or different key stakeholders and say, where do you think we're at with condition. So by that, it's we've effectively managed them through continuous proactive effort. We're proactively mitigating the identified hazards and risks, and we have good tools to be able to collect that information. So do we think we're 20% there? Are we 100% there? And just having that conversation where one leader thinks we're 40, another thinks we're 100, that's an interesting opportunity to align. But then also in this tool that when I'm working with an organization, I'll send it to them in advance just to get them thinking ahead. Then it's interesting for them to prioritize 1 through 10, which one should be immediate focus versus long-term. Because very few, even the largest and successful organizations, very few have the bandwidth to be great at all of these at the same time. So you are going to have to choose who's our customer today? Are our conditions our customer? Is culture the customer? So, and going through this, since I kind of started, so we're looking at conditions. Where are we with that? We're looking at compliance, and that could be pretty broad depending on the span of the organization. Are they just in one town, or are they across multiple regulatory authorities? But we're looking at how the safety requirements are reviewed, how they're audited against, and also, are we ensuring adherence to that? So not just do we have the policies, procedures, paperwork, all of that in place, do people know how to get access to it? Have we trained everybody on it? Is it usable in the organization? And then finally, what's the adherence to that? Then we're looking at capital, and that's money. That's even safety professional resources. You think about a construction job site or in the midstream pipeline construction. I've done a lot in that work as well. We have field safety professionals that need to be out there. So depending on the maturity, depending on the level of risk, the timeline of a project, you may need to have more resources allocated to that. So we're looking at how are funds appropriately managed and distributed for us to be able to improve our span of control and span of influence and safety. And do we have the funding to strategically and tactically accomplish our objectives? Now, that capital allocation is an interesting one, because I'm sure many of the listeners have as well been in those difficult conversations where you're with a board or you're with an executive team and they're talking about their objectives. And I've been in many of these where the objective truly is we want to be the best in our industry or broader in safety performance. Others, we really only have the allocation capabilities to just incrementally get a little bit better year after year. And depending on where the company's at, you know, the old joke is the safest company in the world is the place where there's no risks, there's no employees to get injured and everything. So all of these organizations, at least the for-profit ones, that they're in business to make money for shareholders, for providing services. So that's an interesting one, looking at, can we allocate finances to achieve our objective? And we may find that we can't. So then we're also looking at culture. So that's what's shared among an organization, the shared beliefs, the shared behaviors, the stories that are told, the experiences people have. We're also looking at complete person. Now, complete person makes up a few things. I was in Australia a few years ago and working with organizations that Australia, from at least the research I've been able to find, it has been the first country that has mandated systems around psychological safety. So like we look at physical harm and hazards, and we have to put those systems, we have to check the efficacy, we have to audit all that. Australia, there's now shall statements, and if anybody wants to contact me, I can point them to the documentation, but it's readily found. But now Canada has a standard. England has a standard. Now there's an ISO 45003 standard around psychological safety. But it's so when I'm looking at complete person, and that's a term others have used as well, I'm also looking at mental health, and I'm also looking at nutrition in the workplace. So are we providing the right type of dietary information and food for our knowledge workers or those that are putting their hands on the tools to have access to the right things to reduce cognitive fog or to give them a sense of, you know, the right type of energy to perform their work? So that may be one of those elements that some companies may not be ready to touch for a few years. Others more advanced, that's an area they're really focusing on, mental health. And, you know, suicide rate in America has gone up. So depending on the industry you're in, depending on where you're at, even the demographics of your workforce may necessitate. That's why there's a lot of data considered with this. And that goes into the next element, which I refer to as captured insight. Do we have the right data, access to the data? Can we do anything with that data? Do we have to bring in an intern, somebody to a data scientist for us to really pull that information? If the information's not quickly available for us to make decisions, sometimes that becomes a strategic priority. We need a new enterprise resource planning software to manage this. Then we go into the confidence in the system capacity. So that's our confidence in our hierarchy of controls. How effectively are we preventing these unwanted events? But do we also have the right capacity to recover when they occur? Because mistakes are normal in a complex environment. I'll likely make some mistakes in this discussion here today. Everyone makes mistakes, but do you have recovery mechanisms that either minimize the resulting severity or bring the person and the environment back to the pre-incident state? So what's our confidence both in prevention and recovery capabilities? Then we also have to look at contractor safety management. We have auditable proof across the five major phases. How effective are we managing contractor safety expectations and adherence to, and all of that? Then we get into two final things that are really important, and that's the competency. So 9 would be competency of the safety technical acumen. So not just our safety professionals, but do those leading others, making the decisions, do they have the right technical understanding, even if it's basic, you know, OSHA training, but do we have the right acumen that exists for people to make the right decisions with regards to workplace safety? And then the final one is, are we investing in our people leaders? And that's the competency in the leadership acumen. What are we doing to help our leaders make the right decisions? And I work globally, regardless of where we are. I often find, and it's a thorn in my side, that the most important people to shape performance and culture are the frontline supervisors, and they're also the most undertrained, under-resourced, and underutilized people in an organization. So what are we doing to increase that leadership acumen so we can help us successfully accomplish our objectives and help people perform to the best of their ability?
You gave a great overview there, and you include a scoring template in the Professional Safety Journal article, you know, going through, you know, looking at conditions, compliance, capital, and on down the line. You know, there's so much, you know, so much data, so many perspectives to gather to, you know, really get a handle on where your organization's at and where you want to go. How would you encourage, you know, safety professionals and those involved in this process to really take that on? And along with that, as you noted, like if you do see discrepancies between, you know, your executives are thinking one way where you have other department heads and other people thinking another way, kind of where do you go from there to try to bring the two together?
So if you lack the alignment, sometimes we need to increase what people know about safety, about the expectations. So it depends really on the category of where we're at. Sometimes it's increasing the technical acumen to be able to make the right decisions. Others, it's, I'd use the term maturing the safety excellence thinking. I have a newsletter on LinkedIn called Maturing Safety Thinking that I try to do this with different perspectives and everything. But sometimes we have to move the leadership team to think more maturely about what we're trying to accomplish here. Now, there's a lot of different ways you could do that, whether it's in researching information, benchmarking trips, getting them to think differently, because I firmly believe all progress begins by thinking differently about something. So I've got an organization right now to where we're doing a big executive summit, and the chairman of the board is, he's using the term kind of water dripping them. So every single week leading up to this at the end of May, all the executives have a little bit of a homework assignment. So they're watching a few documentaries, they're reading a few articles, different perspectives, because over the few months that we're in leading up to this, we're wanting to just slowly just start maturing their thinking about this. But more tactically, though, because yes, there is an evolution in thinking. Just like, for example, when I was touring behind the scenes at Sydney Opera House, I learned that about a 10-year or so project, that was built without any fall protection whatsoever. So imagine building something like Sydney Opera House today without fall. There's no way we would think about doing it that way. So our thinking continues to evolve. And 10 years from now, the way that we think about safety and safety excellence evolved, just like psychological safety has been added in America only over the last few years. Other countries have been looking at this for 10 years or more. So some of it is just this continuous maturing and thinking. Others, I've been really successful with getting those right stakeholders together and then walking them through, really, that's the 10 questions. One of the books I wrote was called Inside Strategy, Value Creation from Within Your Organization. And in there, I lay out our methodology that we use to establish corporate or site safety strategy. And it goes through 10 questions that you have to ask and answer. And it's not a perfect linear process, because sometimes you'll get to answering one with information that forces you to go back and answer others. But really, in a consolidated few days, let's just look at a plant or a construction firm, you can establish a very robust and very forward-looking strategic framework for the organization. And that usually comes just from getting people together, having this conversation, agreeing on where we're going first, just like incremental improvement or to truly be world-class, then getting agreement on where we're at. And it's not opinions, it's data. So we need to make sure we have the right information. And then it's, I'm not trying to oversimplify it, but it's coming to agreement on what tactics we're going to deploy to get us closer to what we want, further from what we don't want, injuries and incidents, but also how are we going to monitor along the way that we're creating value for our customers and consumers of our safety efforts. And that's employees, contractors, visitors, management, supervision.
Perfect segue into my next question. A common thread throughout all of this, and as you noted earlier, this isn't a one and done. It's like, okay, we've taken care of this, we can move on to something else. It's all about continuous improvement. So when you think about this model, you know, how can it help organizations get there? Is, you know, periodically or just continuously asking yourself those 10 questions to, you know, eventually get to where they want to be.
And Scott, where they want to be is going to evolve over a period of time. Just like the company I mentioned, just for sake of, you know, case study, they're 3 years into this and they had set a 4-year strategic plan. So they're about to recast that. And even with the things that they're doing, not just in safety, but in in organizational and operational excellence, there are new things that they've discovered, new opportunities. So at least annually, usually there's a group that has oversight, and at minimum quarterly, they're assessing the execution of their plan. But annually, you're going to need to look at how have things changed. When I served in the military, they teach that no first battle plan survives contact with the enemy because the enemy hasn't voted yet. But we have these plans. COVID, I can't tell you how many strategic frameworks I created in early 2020 that were massively disrupted by COVID and how all that changed things. So the challenge is how can we better develop systems of early detection and early response so we're not surprised by incidents, which often result in a knee-jerk reaction, moving and distracting us from what we're trying to actually accomplish here because a leader feels compelled to do something when something bad has happened. But it's a constant review of, do we have the right information? Is it providing us insight? Are we getting us closer to what we want? How are we monitoring that progress and adding value? And being willing to make those adjustments, call those audibles, move in a different area. But one other thing I'll say is every time that I've established a strategy with the organization, they always want to front end load into year one all the things that they can do. So just prioritizing based on impact and effort is a great conversation to get us truly tuned in. I use the language, what can we really do really well this year? Because I would rather bring things from a subsequent year forward if, you know, to today, if we have the bandwidth now. So kind of the overpromise, underdeliver type of thing we want to avoid. But really just having this conversation, and that's why I wanted to put it out there in ASSP and in the public domain, is just having this conversation has been such a great catalyst for continuous improvement, alignment, and being better strategically focused with our safety efforts. Because we still find it. We all do that perception of program of the month, not seeing the continuity between different plans and objectives. So the more that we're transparent with the organization, the more operational leaders have a sense of ownership in this, then it's not some safety strategy developed from some consultant or worse, the safety department. It's for us, by us. You know, it's our strategy. It's our approach. And even if we missed the mark a little bit in 1 year, you know, we're the ones that made those decisions. Let's have our own accountability and ownership, and let's adjust the plan going forward.
That's really interesting. You mentioned, have you found that with a lot of organizations, you know, we want to do everything right now, and you kind of have to rein that in. It's like, okay, no, let's look at what's actually, you know, realistic and what we should focus on based on our organizational priorities.
Yeah, I usually do this. During COVID, I had to do this virtually, which was challenging, but I did it for many multinational organizations. So it's doable, but being in a room where you're putting things on the wall, making it very visible, keeping people pulled back to those decision qualifiers about data, what does success look like, the priorities, all that, is a really helpful mechanism to get people aware of what we're committing to. The other thing that's, and why it's so important to have those other operational leaders in, is whether it's because we can't be transparent about an acquisition target that hasn't been approved yet, for example, we're going to have those people that it's in the back of their mind. And we need that degree of candor to say, let's just not go in that direction. I can't speak to much of it right now, but we can't take that on just yet. Let's just table that for the next year. Or having people in from quality, from supply chain, that have a good understanding about what's going on. Because I regularly, having looked at so many different strategies, I'll usually find something crazy like the company has 52 strategic priorities. And, you know, that sounds ridiculous, but if safety has five, if environmental has five, if occupational health has five, it all starts adding up. And that's why we need the leaders from the different functions of the business that are a part of this. Michael Porter out of Harvard said the essence of strategy is fit among a company's activities. It's also about choosing what not to do. And in safety, we tend to want to throw more at it, do more safety, better safety at some point is better than just throwing more at it. And again, back to those who are frontline supervisors that have so much put on their plate, sometimes we need to take some things away in order for them to be successful at what's really important.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add? Any final thoughts on how organizations can, you know, better find that focus to, you know, improve safety and business performance?
I have continued to improve our own tools. My firm, our team, have continued to improve those tools. That's why I put some of these things like this out there. So use it as a template if you like it, but also continuously modify it. I'm sure that when I look at this tool 3-4 years from now, I'll very likely have missed a couple of things that, as you get deeper and deeper into the organization's activities, it's going to continue to evolve. Again, the way that I looked at it a few years ago is drastically less mature than how I look at it today, because continuous improvement will always be possible, especially with safety and identifying hazards and risks. So I would offer, use this tool, but continuously improve it. And selfishly, let me know if you see any areas that we've missed the mark, because maybe we'll write an update to it next year and add the new perspectives.
Absolutely. Yes, I definitely want to encourage all the listeners out there to look at the Professional Safety Journal article and take what we've discussed in this episode to improve their safety and health management systems.
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate this opportunity.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Case for Safety podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and be sure to leave a review to help others find the show. You can also connect with us at ASSP.org. We'll see you next time.